At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Check it out now. No doubt now.
Thursday, January 14th, 2021. It's the Beating the Book Megapod for divisional round playoffs in the National Football League. It's Gil Alexander. This is a special one because we have more than one rotating guest. The staples of the show here, as always, Mike Palm, Derek Stevens, consigliere here at Circus Sports. How you doing, Mikey?
Wonderful, wonderful. Excited.
Can we announce your show that's coming up real quick?
We cannot talk about time.
Okay.
Because the VSiN people didn't tell the people who it affects. When they're going to tell a person he's going from days to swing, that they might want to tell him before the day before.
Should I have not brought that up?
Oh, it's okay. You could say it, just not the time slot.
Okay. Yeah, well, you'll have your own show.
We'll have a show with Amal Shaw.
There you go.
That will air Monday through Friday.
And what is it called?
Well, I'll tell you, right now the working title is The Nuts, N-U-T-Z.
I like it. Poker reference?
It is. Derek wanted odds on with Mike and Amal, but Bill said you can't protect that, anything with odds in it.
Yeah.
Bill wanted the playbook, but I think that ignores Amal. My personal favorite is The Mayor and the Mumbai. But they said it's a little risque.
That's a really interesting choice you got there for co-host, Mike. Kind of interesting, huh?
Oh, that voice is the other staple of the show, Todd Wishnev, who feels as though he got snubbed. Did Hashem get you again, Todd? Is this Hashem's fault? By the way, for the Gentiles listening again, Hashem, what renounced Orthodox Jews like Todd refer to as God. My parents, who are Israeli, do not use that phrase.
You cannot say God. Isn't it Yahweh?
No.
What is Yahweh? We sing Yahweh, I know you are near. That's something.
Yeah,
something.
Hashem, the name, by the way, literally. Ladies and gentlemen, one of our rotating guests, as Aaron Schatz said when he famously came on this program, he goes, it's going to take me a little while to get used to the rhythm of the show.
The rhythm of the show.
That's right. It's former offensive lineman who, for the better part of a decade, played for five different teams in the National Football League. And he's been kind enough to come on a numbers game, now on the Megapod, played for Panthers, Vikings, Chiefs, Giants, and Lions. His brother, Mitchell, plays with the Kansas City Chiefs. It's Jeff Schwartz, everybody. How you doing, Jeff?
I am good. I feel like I fit in right away. Another Jew on the podcast. And
right.
we're very close to a minion, so it's good to go.
You are a true member of the leaflet. I am. This is the first time we've ever had a legit guy on the leaflet. By the way, Jeff also has he works for Sirius, does things with Fox Sports, has two podcasts. Jeff Schwartz is smarter than you. Aptly named one of them.
Jeff, have you ever heard the Yom Kippur Massacre story?
Okay, Todd, I'm giving the intro. Can we wait for that for a second? One more. He also has a podcast called Minus Three with Sheck and Schwartz with former NFL Network personality Dave Damashek. Cousin Sal also is on there. What did I miss, Jeff? Yeah. What else did I leave out?
That's about enough. Okay. Some one-offs every now and then. But I want to now hear what I'm about the Yom Kippur Massacre.
So it's phenomenal. It's one of the great gambling stories ever. Now.
My first appearance on the Gil a numbers game show at VSiN, I told the Yom Kippur massacre story, which is a story that it can't be made up, but it has to do with Jews and gambling, and you will love it. I'll tell you after today's show.
You don't want to tell it now? Let's tell it
now. You want me to go through the whole thing?
Yes, but can we introduce Las Vegas Chris first, and then we'll do the Yom Kippur massacre? Okay, ladies and gentlemen. He finished second and fifth in this year's Circa Millions. He also finished with his two entries in the top, like, 36 last year. He's won contests in Las Vegas over the last decade at the Palms, at the Wynn. He won college football last man standing at Stations in 2016. Big Maher, by the way. It's Las Vegas Chris, everybody. How you doing, Chris?
I'm doing well. Running late this morning, but...
One over, $250,000 altogether in terms of his two entries, his quarterly prize, and a hedge on that final game. And more impressive than all of that was you coming on a numbers game and telling the story about the mistake that you made in week 16, which was very transparent and honest. And even more than that, and I've run this the last couple days on the radio side, you tweeted out all of your picks beyond just the contest, all the football picks you've made this year. And you crushed it. There were only like 120, 130 picks, only 19 of which were you negative closing line value on. And you were 17-2 in those. Dude, that's unbelievable. 19. And you're going to do a study on previous years for you to see if that's like something you've been doing?
I actually got to it last night a little bit, and it's not looking the same. So,
but you figured it wouldn't look the same, right?
I was hoping that it would at least lean. I'm about a third through the last season, and it's about 50-50 on those that I get the worst of the line.
Look at this, Mikey. Look at this. 17-2. Those are the only games he didn't have positive closing line value on. Dude is rich. That's the greatest season ever. Look at that. Do you remember those two? You lost Green Bay November 1st, Pittsburgh. December 7th. That's it. That's the list that he lost on those. But 19 total. Good for you, man. Congratulations.
Just grinding.
Okay. You're the best, man. You're the best in the biz. All right. Before we do the divisional round, the show is only going to get worse after this. The Yom Kippur Massacre from Todd Wishnev. One of the great gambling stories of all time. Have you heard this before?
Yes.
Oh, it's the greatest story. Go ahead, Toddy.
Jeff, the only reason because you say you're a Jew and you played in the National Football League, which that's why this story is going to be even greater for you. And that's why I feel like which should be told. So here's what happened.
Todd, stop. What do you mean he says he's a Jew? What do you mean by that? You doubt whether he's a Jew?
Actually Jewish, yes.
You doubt that he's a Jew? That he's pretending to be a Jew?
Jeff, if that is your name.
Yeah.
That's right.
His real last name is O'Malley. Mikey. He changed it to Schwartz.
Mikey, in the gambling world, you deal with a lot of people that are not necessarily who they say they are. So I have to be very careful. You know what I mean? You never know.
He has a Wikipedia page. He played in the league, Todd.
I'm kidding around.
Those pictures behind me, they're someone else on the wall.
That's right. It's all a put on.
Okay. Yeah. Anyway, so here's what happened, Jeff. It was back in 2014. I was betting way more money than I should have been betting on a particular game relative to my bankroll. And I absolutely needed to win this game. First of all, it happened to be Yom Kippur on the day. Okay. Yom Kippur, I think it was like October 4th, 2014. I was living in Los Angeles. And because I am a renounced Jew, I do not go to temple on Yom Kippur. I don't do any of that nonsense. I know it's a Saturday college football. It's a holiday because there's only about 14 college football Saturdays. You have to watch football. I don't care what day it is. So I go over to my friend's house, who's like a Fagazi Jew, and we're watching the college football games, right? And I have a huge bet. This is about 3:30. I have a huge under 34.5 in the second half of the Arizona State USC game. Okay. Under 34.5. So I'm just hoping no points, right? It's late in the afternoon, and USC and Arizona State only scored 13 points. There's like 5 minutes to go. There's no way I'm losing this game. This is about as easy, and I need to win this game. I have a lot of money on this game. There's no way I'm losing this game. So I said to my friend, the Fagazi Jew, who was fasting, even though he's sitting there watching college football, and Yom Kippur Jews fast. And since he's a Fagazi Jew, he
really?
Wasn't actually in
that.
Temple.
Did not know
he was
that.
Just sitting there watching college football with me. So I said to him, look, it's getting dark. Yom Kippur ends at dark. you know, I'll go around the corner and get you a sandwich because there's no way I'm going to lose this game. That's how confident I am I'm winning this game. I go around the corner, I get him a sandwich, I come back, everything's fine. All of a sudden, with about like 3 minutes to go, touchdown, onside kick recovery touchdown, another touchdown, all these touchdowns, and I'm like starting to get very, very nervous. But I'm still fine. I'm still absolutely fine. There's one play left. Arizona State is at the 48-yard line of USC. They're going to throw a Hail Mary into the end zone. They'll knock it down, game over. It'll be 34 instead of 34 and a half. Everything will be fine. So the quarterback for Arizona State, Mike Bercovici, goes back to pass, throws it up into the air at the Los Angeles Memorial Coliseum. All the USC fans are expecting him to knock the ball down. I believe it was Jalen Samuels, maybe, jumps in the air at the 2-yard line in front of a pack of people, catches the ball, falls in the end zone. The Coliseum is dead quiet. They can't believe what just happened. This insane win for Arizona State. But I'm even more crazed because I can't even believe that I lost this bet. My friend just looks at me dumbfounded. We can't even believe what just happened. We can't even speak. It's just so incredible, right? Okay, fine. So that's just a bad beat story, right? So Jeff, you're going to say, "That's what's so great about that story? It's just a stupid bad beat story, right?" Well, here's where it gets interesting. 2 weeks later, my friend's at the coffee shop in Beverly Hills. He goes, "You got to come over here. You got to come over here. You got to meet somebody." I'm like, okay, whatever. First, he sends me an email with a picture of a college football player. He's never sent me a picture of a college football player in his entire life. He doesn't know anything about football. It's a picture of somebody. And I say, "Do you know who that is?" He goes, "No." I said, "That's the guy who threw the Yom Kippur massacre pass. That's Mike Bercovici." He goes, "Well, his grandfather's here at the coffee shop. That's why I sent you the picture." I'm like, "His grandfather is at the coffee shop?" He's like, "Yeah, you got to come over here and tell him what happened, blah, blah, blah." So I go over to the coffee shop. This guy, his name is like Ruben. He's like from Romania.
Shmuel Bercovici.
He speaks in a very, very thick accent. And we're talking about the game. And I said, "Oh, you know, your grandson cost me a fortune a couple of weeks ago." And he's like, "Oh yeah, the what did he call it?" He doesn't call it he goes, "The holy moly? You talking about the holy moly?" I said, no, "The Hail Mary." He goes, "No, the holy moly." He calls it the holy moly. I go, "Yeah, the holy moly really cost me the Hail Mary touchdown pass." So we're talking and I'm like, "Wow, that was just one of the worst situations of all time." He's like, I said, "Were you at the game?" You know, because the guy lives in Los Angeles. The grandfather lives in Los Angeles. I said, he goes, "Oh, yeah, I go to all his games, but I wasn't at that game." I go, "You weren't at the game? You go to every game and they're playing in L.A.? And now, you know, he goes to Arizona to go to the games, right? Mm-hmm. He's not going to go to a game at the Coliseum." He goes, "Oh, yeah, it was Yom Kippur." I go, "It was Yom Kippur? What?" I go, "You're Jewish?" He goes, yeah, of course, I'm Jewish. I don't go to the game on Yom Kippur." So I go, "Wait a second, is your daughter's Jewish? Okay, so it turns out, you know, the way the Orthodox Jews go is it goes through the mom, right? If the mom is Jewish, you're Jewish, according to the Orthodox.
Be very clear, I am very Jewish. I understand this, yes.
Okay, like,
the backstory.
Anyways, so it turns out that Mike Bercovici is Jewish. So
he screwed you.
What happened here is, of all the people in the world that my friend meets, he doesn't meet any college football grandfathers ever. In his whole life, he never has met one. He meets the grandfather of the guy who throws the Yom Kippur massacre pass, and the guy is Jewish. Now, how many Jewish football players are there, Jeff, besides you and maybe Goldberg from the Atlanta Falcons? I can't think of too many.
Not many. I mean, the moral story here is don't bet a second half under in a Pac-12 game.
That's right.
That's the moral of the story.
More than anything. Tariq Cohen, Eddie Goldman. I mean, the Bears are full of the Jews.
You know what? I didn't, Jerome Levy, I didn't tell the story as good as I did when I was on Gills because I've forgotten some of the details. Yeah. But the point is there's so few Jews in Division I college football. The guy who throws the Yom Kippur massacre pass is Jewish. It's unfathomable.
It's Hashem telling you, don't bet on Yom Kippur.
That's right.
That's what some people would say.
Mikey, you wanted to say something?
Reminds me of that great episode from All in the Family, where Archie Bunker is talking about the Jews, this and that, and Sally Struthers says, "But Daddy, Jesus was a Jew. Carol O'Connor said, yeah, but only on his mother's side.
Todd, that to me is one of the great gambling stories ever. I might have blown it for you when I said Shmuel Berkovici. So I might have botched that for you. I do apologize.
Well, I didn't tell it as well as I usually do because yeah. I haven't told it in a long time. But basically, the point is, for people who don't understand the significance of the story, there are no Jews in football.
Yeah.
I mean, there are very, very few. There might be one on the screen currently, but in general, there are no Jews in football. So of all the guys that you're ever going to meet their grandfather, first of all, you're not going to meet too many grandfathers of Division I quarterbacks in your whole life. And right. 2 weeks after they throw the Yom Kippur Massacre story, it's probably even less likely. But on top of that, on top of all that unlikeliness, the guy's Jewish. It's crazy.
Reform.
There's more Jewish owners in the NFL than Jewish players. I had a trainer on our team tell me all the time, like, he's like, Schwartz, you should be owning the team, not playing for it.
Baseball.
There's still time, Jeff. There's still time. There's still time
yeah.
for that. All right, Chris, aren't you glad you showed up? Weekend. You showed up for this?
You know, I listen to podcasts all day long,
yeah.
and I kind of went off a little bit, and I go, wait a minute, I'm in this one.
I take some time to get used to the rhythm of this podcast. All right, let's start.
Long story. I told you I would have told you after, Gil.
No, I loved it. I think it was worth it. People will enjoy that. All right, let's start with the first game. We'll just do them game by game because people are going to have thoughts on each. We won't do the three best bets.
Before we do that, don't yes. we have to give the standings?
Well,
no, it's over.
It's okay. It's over. Mikey won.
I won. It's over.
Okay, so basically they don't want to talk about the fact that I crushed them in the playoffs 2-0-1, and both of them went 0-3. And let me just say one thing. I want to say something sad about the Pittsburgh Steelers. Why aren't the Pittsburgh Steelers still playing? Because I love betting against them, even though I'm sad they lose. They're such an easy bet against. The Browns, +6, baby!
Listen, between Tomlin going for 1 instead of 2 down 13, punting with the first play on the first play of the fourth quarter, 4th and short, got into punt formation, sent 45 guys in motion, like he was gonna fool somebody on defense. That was Tomlin's candidacy for the worst in-game coaching moves of the week. Carroll had about 4 gaffes in a 5-minute span, challenging the Jared Goff over the line of scrimmage. You know, there was that. There was the whole his defense. You know, jumps off sides, 1st and goal at the 10 with just over 2 minutes left. What was the other Carroll stuff? Oh, they kicked the field goal, 4th and 1.
Twice he did it short. Short. Twice he kicked short field goals, 4th and 2, 4th and 1.
Oh, and then there was other thing that DK Metcalf was whining. So what do? You force feed the whining wide receiver, pick six the other way.
Changed the whole game.
I did. Okay, that was his candidacy. Who were we forgetting? Vrabel, 4th and 2.
Reich, 2.
Right. Vrabel, 4th and 2, which, by the way, Pro Football Perspective went back. There has never been another instance in the playoffs in that situation since 1994, their database, where someone did that with that little time left in the game, down 4 points, 4th and 2 in plus territory. And then, Reich with the 4th and goal at the 4, going for it at the end of the second quarter. And then Josh Allen matriculates the ball down the field. I mean, what was worse? Do you ever remember that many on a playoff weekend? Here's what I love about Chris. Chris is like, I don't watch any of this stuff. I don't have to deal with the ups and downs. I just have my pick, and then I see the result.
I watch very little.
I know you do.
I will give Reich this. I thought Reich called a good game, though. Even when they were down, he still used the run. He knew he could run the ball, and that's what kicked off those drives that got them back into the game, was actually the running game that set Phillip Rivers into positive field position, and they were able to drive though. So from a play calling perspective, I thought Reich had a good game. But from a game management perspective, the 4th and 4 whatever goal with a non-mobile quarterback going for 2 because offsides on the extra point and chasing those points was poor. But from a play calling perspective, I thought he had a good afternoon.
You're the referee.
I believe I said last week the Bills defense stinks, and I was right about that. Six and a half points.
Go ahead, Jeff.
The third down play, by the way, was more of a great play by Buffalo than a poor play by the Colts. The Buffalo Bills broke a tendency. I broke it down on my Twitter at Jeff Schwartz. The Colts motioned a guy across thinking it was man coverage, which it was, but the Bills didn't rotate their guys. They just kind of rotated safeties, and there was an unblocked guy. And Frank Reich said afterwards, we didn't expect him to be there. We had game planned that he would run. So, like, I don't really mind being aggressive because we saw what Tomlin wasn't aggressive. Vrabel wasn't aggressive. And you lose games not being aggressive. So I was fine with him going for it. The guy was open. Pittman, he missed him on 4th down. Like, Rivers has just got to be better.
Missed him.
Because Rivers is not a Hall of Fame quarterback, Jeff.
Oh, here
There's
we go.
You can make a good throw.
You can make a good throw if you're not a Hall of Fame quarterback. But he still had a guy open. He should have. I'd rather be aggressive than not. And they made back the 2-point conversion later anyway. So, like, I think we've seen in the NFL that when you play almost not to lose is when you lose. And so I'm fine with coaches being aggressive. And the Colts should have won that game, right? 450 yards, no turnovers. First team in NFL history to lose a game in the playoffs with those stats.
Yep.
They should have won the game. It's why I like Baltimore this weekend. We'll get to that later. But I just think that, like, the Colts were okay to be aggressive. They should execute. It happens.
This is why I like having Jeff on the show, because he actually played the game and knows exactly what happened. The rest of us are just pretending like we know what happened without, you know.
Jeff, we had this thing where I was on a numbers game and I said Phil Rivers is not a Hall of Fame quarterback with Lombardi, and Lombardi went crazy that Phil Rivers is a Hall of Fame quarterback. There's only been 26 Hall of Fame quarterbacks, and he's not one. And the reason he's not one is because he missed that fourth down pass. Now, granted, of course you can make the fourth down pass, but whenever it's a big spot, Mr. Philip Rivers blows it every time, baby.
He does.
Blows it every time.
Last thing about last week, because I want to get to these divisional round games, but you're the referee expert. First of all, we talk about all the bad things. Sean McDermott tried to save his team twice, and I got it. That's what all these owners are meeting with prospective coaches. I don't know how I would do this, but I would try to ascertain, like, who's going to be my best guy in the moment. Sean McDermott called the timeout to force the review on that Pittman fumble. Didn't go his way. And then they gave him back the timeout because they were like, hey, you know what? It was really the replay booth that initiated it or whatever, right? And then the clock wound. The Colts didn't snap it. And then he used that timeout he just got back, in effect like a basketball game where they have a foul to give and they make you have to restart the play. So from 19 to 14 seconds, then he quickly called the timeout right before Rivers could snap it. And that was a massive 5 seconds. What happened there with the clock?
First of all, Brad Allen fucked the clock up twice.
Yeah.
Okay.
No. No.
Jeff, how can they stop the clock when they ruled it on the...
I'll tell you why.
Wait, can I ask the question?
Let him speak.
How can he stop the clock at 39 seconds when they ruled him down by contact? What stops the clock for 12 seconds at that point?
That error I didn't see, but the one everyone's talking about, Pittman fumbled the ball out of bounds. The broadcast did not cover it. Mm-hmm. He fumbled the ball out of bounds, so the clock stops as they retrieve the ball, they put the ball back, and then they run the clock.
Yeah, right.
Nobody in the broadcast even mentioned it all,
right?
That it was a fumble. Like, I don't, that, so the referees, everyone was killing them on the internet. Like, I didn't see their problem with that, because that, and the question about why the clock, they have a 10-second runoff to review in that instance, right? Because the Colts had no timeouts. So when there's a review with no timeouts, which I don't like this rule, really, they dock the team with 10 seconds. That's why the clock, that's why I went from 39 to 29.
But the McDermott using that at 14, that was like a 5 seconds that disappeared because he used it right before the snap. I thought it was awesome.
If that play goes off, and it goes off as they played it, right? He called it right. I mean, they tackle him in bounds. I don't know if they can get another, if they can spike the ball in time there. But the whole thing at the end was, I just disagreed with why they stopped the clock at 39 when you ruled it down by contact. It shouldn't have stopped there. It should have kept running. And then the Colts have to scramble. And it's an 18-yard pass. It's going to take them time to get to the line and run another play. But they got the
benefit
of the clock.
Wasn't it a fumble also, Mikey? Wasn't it also actually a
39.
Fumble?
Brad Allen stopped the clock at 39 while they decided he was down by contact. But the ruling on the field was down by contact. It's got to keep moving.
So they stopped it, and then they moved it 10 seconds, right, for the runoff.
Mm-hmm.
And they ran it. Then Pittman fumbled, which that was a terrible play call.
Yep.
Pittman fumbled. So then the clock kept running. And then Phil Rivers completed that pass, but McDermott called timeout, right? So it's about 16 seconds is the cutoff to when you can run up and spike the ball if you run a normal play. If you game plan for, like, okay, we're going to throw the ball right to the middle of the field and we're going to immediately fall down, declare ourselves down, you can do it in like 14 seconds. That's about the time you can get a spike off. That's like kind of about where it's at.
All right, here, Jeff, here were your 7 picks from last week. We have them on the screen.
Oh, yeah.
Went 4-3 on them. And as we were talking about yesterday on a numbers game on VSiN, kind of got unlucky on one of the three, which was not unlucky, but, you know, the Baker Mayfield one took on a life of its own because that game was how it was. But here are all the correct ones. Indianapolis plus 6.5. Bears team total under, which was never a problem. 18.5. Lamar over 68.5 rushing. No problem. Baltimore minus 3 came home. And the only ones that didn't get there, under Rams Seahawks 42.5, under Tampa Washington first half 22.5, because you got Taylor Heinicke'd, and then the Baker Mayfield under passing yards. Which, again, I don't know how much you can read into that game, but that was a nice job on those.
Thank you.
Let's do game by it. Yeah, let's do game by game. Number one in terms of chronological order, the Rams are at the Packers. This is the first of the two games on Saturday. Packers number one seed, the Rams coming off their win against Seattle. This has gone down through the seven to the Packers minus 6.5. And I couldn't, man, when the Rams were winning that game, all I kept saying to myself was, New Orleans, get it done tomorrow. I want to see Jared Goff in cold weather. Now, it's only supposed to be 28 degrees, not, you know, mildish for Green Bay, Wisconsin, but it's 6.5. Jeff, we'll start with you. Were you surprised this went down through the seven? And how do you feel about this game?
No, because a lot of people just saw the Rams play, right? So they're going to bet on the Rams just being the Seahawks. And Jared Goff, look, he was 9 of 19. He wasn't that good, but he played well enough for them to win the game. They sacked Russell Wilson. Then they hit him 19 times, but they sacked him 5 times. But here's the thing about cold weather. So, you know, he's only played 2 games under 35 degrees. He completes 47% of his passes, 34% passer rating. Even if you go a little bit warmer weather, from 36 to 50 degrees, he's completing 55% of passes. Like, he's not good in cold weather, and he might not even play this weekend. They're talking about Wolford playing still. Like, I don't get the Rams offense. I like the Packers here for many reasons, but mostly because I think the Rams offense is not going to score points in this game. Like, I know people crushed the Green Bay defense, but they've gotten better. Look at the last 5 weeks of the season. They've gotten a lot better. They can stop the run. If you make Goff throw the ball, they're not going to win the game with Goff throwing the football.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty: Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty: Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am like I am where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, if... No. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's amazing what we're even talking about. A guy with a 9-figure contract and then a guy who started one game here. It's like we don't know who they're going with here. Chris Zanuck, Las Vegas Chris, what you got?
I was very surprised that the line came down.
I
thought it was a kind of a pump fake that everybody went down to 6.5 and they were going to just pound it back up. I still think it's going to go back up, but... it's really hard to stomach the Rams. Like Jeff said, how in the hell are they going to score any points? The way Goff throws the ball with his hand, it's sort of like a jump ball. You feel like he's just lofting the ball, and and it has like a club hand or something. So, but my metrics on this seem to actually be in line with a lot of other people. We're getting the extra value. I think this line should be around 3.5. But the Rams are so solid on defense. They cover everything. They're going to really put the pressure on Rodgers. Obviously, they'll be able to cover Adams, and they're going to be able to run some defensive schemes that should be able to confuse. They're going to put pressure on Rodgers, and they had 5 sacks last week against a more mobile Wilson. So that's a hell of a lot of pressure. And a lot of people don't realize Green Bay played a very weak schedule. I think it was the 31st ranked schedule in the NFL. So, you know, when you're playing Minnesota, Chicago, and Detroit twice, and it's just like last year again, they had a really nice trip. We don't know how good this team really is, but my metrics say the Rams should cover this. My brain says, how the hell are they going to score? I mean, they got to win 3-0, you know, lose 3-0 to cover or something. But
what usually wins in your brain versus metrics competition?
Well, I find that the more painful the wager, usually the better it is. I mean, I get very scared when I like a side a lot. So the harder it is to place the wager, I think the better off I am in the result.
So Rams plus the points, you made that bet?
I did take the +7.
Okay. I took the Green Bay. I took Green Bay -6.5, and I have Green Bay in teaser legs because I have them with Baltimore, which we'll get to, on its own in a teaser, and I also have them going back to Alabama. I never tease college football, but in this case I did with Bama, so that one's already in. But I hate being on the opposite side of you on the ATS. Mikey?
The only, I think, break the Rams catch here is that they get the early game. And it's going to be 28 degrees at 3:30 in Green Bay instead of if the kickoff was at 7:30 and you might be that game dropping down, you know, closer to 20 degrees. But if I play the game, I'm probably just going to tease Green Bay down because I just don't understand how Goff's going to be able to move the ball unless they're really effective running the ball against Green Bay, and I don't see that happening. Rodgers has been so good.
Effortless.
It's just so good, and he's so in control of the game and the pace of the game and at the line of scrimmage. It's hard for me to envision a scenario where the Rams win this game.
And I would cede to Jeff on this, but I was talking to Jeff about this on a numbers game yesterday. Jalen Ramsey, great. You can look at the stats. He checks the opposing wide receiver number ones. He's held them all less than 100 yards. But the Rodgers Devontae telepathic connection this year is just phenomenal. And I don't see Jalen Ramsey being able to hold that down. Do you, Jeff?
I think he can if they leave Devontae Adams kind of in one place, but they move him around. Here's one area I found that's kind of interesting in play action pass. So the Rams allow the most separation of any defense against play action pass, 4.5 yards almost of separation on play action pass. And we know Rodgers this year is almost up to 30% of his attempts are play action pass. So that's where I think one specific area where Devontae Adams might have a little bit of a go against this Rams defense is getting hit on those play action passes. You run the ball a couple times, you hit that play action pass, and maybe Devontae Adams able to get off from the slot, especially because Ramsey doesn't always travel in the slot. I think 16% of his snaps are in the slot, but I'm curious to see how the Packers move around Adams to find ways to not have him on Ramsey. One last thing too. Robert Tonyan, their tight end, has 11 touchdowns on 59 targets, all right? If you can play him for a touchdown this weekend, it's a pretty interesting bet because the Rams only allow they've only allowed 7 touchdowns all year to wide receivers. That's it. So the tight end might be a spot here where you can get some value on a big plus number to get a touchdown this game.
I'm writing that one down. Tonyan, touchdown. 11 touchdowns, 59 targets. Was that the number, Jeff?
Yeah.
Wow.
This season, yes.
And now from his mom's cork attic in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Todd Wishnev, everybody.
First of all, you can check out my Twitter at TWishnev. And if you like college basketball, you might really like it. I'm currently 228 and 152.
Jesus.
For a cool 60% in college basketball this year on my in-game plays. So you might really like that 228 and 152 is quite a few units up.
Why are you giggling, Mikey?
Hoops Peterson is 1,700 games over 500.
Oops. Yeah, but there's a difference between me and Hoops Peterson.
Well, you're betting.
You're actually betting. That's right.
Yeah, and I'm also giving the real line. That's another difference. Anyways, at T. Wishnev, you might like it. Sometimes we even sing made-up songs like Hail to the Heineke.
Oh,
that was one of our songs last week. Hail victory, hail to Taylor Heineke. The over cashes for me. That was a fantastic song from last week when Heineke put us over on the in-game over in the Washington game. By the way, did that game not look like the other team was not really trying somewhat? I mean, Jeff, maybe you can tell us, is there shenanigans going on in football? Does somebody want the games closer for the networks? I mean, it just, what is going on in pro football sometimes?
None of that is happening in pro football.
What about, let me ask you this, Jeff. If a game's like a blowout, does it seem like the refs sometimes are trying to keep it a little closer, or would you think that's just total balderdash?
That's total bullshit. There's no one's trying to keep a game close. They don't get paid to keep a game close. Like they just call what they see. I think the referees sometimes, I think try to find penalties too often. But no one's doing anything of that sort.
Untoward.
Never ever.
Okay, well, that's why I wanted to ask you, because a lot of times you watch these games and they're just so tight, and it seems like, I don't know. Anyways, I'm glad
I think
you
the
said
reason why the reason why there are a lot of one-score games is because it's hard to win in the NFL, and they're like right. Everyone's a pro, and everyone's playing hard, and everyone's trying to make their money, and you don't want to be blown out, especially on national television. It's embarrassing to get blown out. Everyone talks shit about you, and here's the thing about it: is playing football in the NFL, it's tough, right? Like it's mentally draining, physically draining, and everyone in the facility is there for one purpose: to win. And when you don't win, everyone's depressed. Everybody, the whole facility, the marketing people, the advertising people, because their job is worse if you don't win either. So the only thing that makes it fun is winning. So everyone's out here trying to win football games on Sunday. Now, you might tank Monday through Saturday with your personnel moves. That's from up above my pay grade, obviously. But on Sunday, everyone's playing to win. Except
this
Doug Peterson in the fourth quarter. That's it. Everyone else is playing to win.
Right. This is why I always say when people go, oh, this team doesn't need the game and this team's not trying for this. And I'm like, what are you talking about? All these guys are professionals and want to make their money. They're all trying. And I'm glad you said that. And that's why I brought it up, because you say that on Twitter and everyone goes, oh, yeah, for sure. That's true. And I'm like, I'm not saying it's true. I'm saying I don't know what's going on, but I would love to ask a real NFL player because to me, it seems like everyone's trying for their money.
There.
I'm going to go off topic. You want to stay with this topic?
Just one offshoot to that. So I lost in Survivor because the Rams lost outright to the Jets. What would you attribute that to, Jeff? I would like an autopsy on that game, if you would.
The Jets are playing hard each Sunday.
They
might lose a game because of poor, Greg Williams, calling zero coverage in a stupid situation. But all those guys want to win. Like, Sam Darnold doesn't care whether or not they draft Justin Fields next season or Trevor Lawrence. He's worried about him. And he actually winning football games might have saved him from having to, from his job being lost next year. Players don't care. Beckton, their left tackle, he's a rookie. He doesn't care about 4 years from now. He's worried about now, winning now.
I was more about the Rams side. Like, how does Aaron Donald not make a mark in that game, though?
I think throughout the weeks, you just don't get up for every game. Like, it's kind of just human nature, I think. I think even we can look back to this weekend. The Pittsburgh Steelers defensive line got dominated by the Browns, right? And even they had Michael Dunn playing left guard, right? Jewish kid, by the way. Jewish kid playing left guard for the Browns. He played really well. And you look at, like, how can the Steelers defensive line not play well? And my whole theory about that was, all week they were told the fancy's not going to be there, the left guard's not going to be there, the offensive line coach's not going to be there, and they just kind of aren't as up for the game. And I think the Rams, that situation, just weren't ready to play that weekend.
Yeah, but Tony was
Jeff,
out.
One other thing I wanted to ask you, because we don't get to talk to too many ex-NFL players. If you watch these NFL games, you love watching the talking heads go, well, the right tackle's out this week, and that's a disaster, and the defensive back is out, and that's a disaster. But they never talk about the fact the guy has a backup. Now, if the backup is also stinks, then okay, maybe it's something. But not every backup stinks. Some backups are almost as good as the starter, right?
It depends on the position. Like, there's not many like backup offensive linemen, they're hanging out. If they were that good, they'd be playing somewhere. Like that's part of it too, right? Is there's typically if you're a backup, you're a backup for a reason, you're a starter for a reason. And so there are certain positions where you can get by with a backup, you know, like in a wide receiver, if you're missing one guy, you have multiple other guys, but like, you know, offensive line, for example, if you're missing one, sometimes it's tough to play because you're a unit, you have to play as a unit, right? So I think there are reasons why injuries do play a role in how you view games on the weekends.
Jeff, can I ask you an off-topic question?
Yeah.
What is the effect of moving the umpire to behind the offensive line been on the NFL game?
Well, the NFL, I mean, this year has just said they're not going to call holding, right? I mean, they can kind of pick and choose how they're going to do it. You know, what it has affected a little bit is there's, you know, the defensive holding doesn't get called on the defensive line. They hold the shit out of us sometimes. It just makes it easier for them to call holdings because they're right there. They see our hands. They see where we're at. You know, when the umpire's in the middle, he kind of just has the inside three guys. He can get distracted by, you know, bodies flying around the place. But look, the NFL has made a concerted effort this year to not call holding. It's very simple. I mean, you can tell you can see by the numbers that holdings are down, and maybe that's why scoring is up sometimes. But I don't like that. I don't like that. You could just say, hey, don't call this. My whole theory with officiating is simple. If you see it, call it. Like, don't go out there looking to call a penalty. Like, I feel like sometimes they look to call OPI too much. Like, oh, that's a pick play. We're calling that. Just call it as you see it. If it's a pick play, if it is, if it's not, then don't call it.
That Snead pick play was something else, wasn't it? This past weekend. Todd, did you give your pick?
No, I'd like to give my pick. I'd like to take – can I take the under, or are we just talking about the side?
Yeah, you can take the under.
I think this is an under game. Obviously, you guys have talked about why the Rams stink. The Rams are going to have a real tough time scoring, and obviously, defensively, they could probably hang in. Plus, you know, the Packers have had a lot of games where they go on these long drives and hold the ball. I can remember a number of games where the Packers are on like an 8-minute drive to start the game. The Atlanta game comes to mind early in the season. So to me, this is going to have to be – the Rams are going to have to also try to run the ball and keep the score low. They know they got to keep it low. They're not going to stay with the Packers. So I like the under and, you know, probably the team total. Here in Pennsylvania, you have team total in games, so the options are limitless here. But if I had to bet it before the game, I'd probably take the under 19.5 with the team total with the Rams because I don't see how they're going to score the ball, obviously, like everybody else has said. It's not, you know, it's not rocket science. Jared Goff, you know, everyone's giving the statistics of what's Jared Goff in 28 degrees, what's he in 46 degrees, what's he in regular degrees? He's not good in regular degrees. I don't care what he is. He stinks.
In regular degrees. Game two on Saturday. We go to the AFC, Baltimore at Buffalo. This has been an interesting line because a lot of Baltimore money early on. This dipped all the way to 2. Even saw some 1.5s here in favor of the Bills. And then it went the other way. Now it's Buffalo minus 2.5 extra juice. So we may see 3 yet again between the Bills, who beat the Colts this past week by a field goal, and Baltimore vanquished the Tennessee Titans. I'm telling you, man, that Baltimore game, that when they were down 10-0 and it was 3rd and long for Lamar Jackson, I can't prove this, but if he doesn't throw the 17-yard play to Andrews where he gets flushed out of the pocket, who knows how that game goes from that point forward? We'll never know. Jeff, we start with you. What do you like here?
So I like the Ravens just money line. I'll take the 2.5, but my favorite play in this game is Lamar Jackson over rushing. I think it's like 16.5. And, guys, the Bills' rush defense, this is why I think the Ravens are winning this game. They're 23rd, according to EPA. They're 25th in yards per attempt, and they're ranked 31st by Pro Football Focus. If you just watch the games they played, they played 4 close games in the last 3 months. The Chiefs, the Cardinals, which they lost, the Patriots, who they beat by 3. Remember, Cam was driving down to win that game, and they fumbled. And last weekend, what's the common theme? The opponent rushes the ball very well. 180 yards, 245 yards, 225 yards. What do the Ravens do? They rush the ball extremely well. The Bills don't stop the run. It's not what they do. And they have a Ravens team who feeling themselves after finally winning a playoff game. I think they go into Buffalo and rush for over 300 yards. Like, I just think they dominate on the ground. And the one concern I have, though, is that Josh Allen is really good against pressure, like really good. And the Baltimore defense brings a ton of pressure, number 1 in the NFL in blitz rate. But we saw at the end of the Colts game, Josh Allen still has that YOLO in him, where he still just makes those stupid-ass plays where he fumbles the ball at the end of the game. Yeah. I'm telling you, man, you could sense it coming. You could see it coming at the end of that game. If this game is close at the end, I think that they will force him into one of those stupid plays again. But my favorite play of the weekend is Lamar Jackson over. It's 60 yards, I think. Like, that, to me, feels like it's way, way, way too low. He averages over 11 yards when he keeps the ball on a zone read. That's incredible. Like, that feels way too low for me. That's my favorite play in this game, but I'll take Baltimore anyways.
You know what I love about the Lamar Jackson prop, the over-rushing, is I don't see a game script or game flow where that doesn't happen. Whether they're up or down, I think that happens. Because you can make
it's
a case for
74 and a half, though.
It's up to 74 and a half. That is
74?
I still
Oh,
like
wow.
It.
I got it like...
DraftKings at 74 and a half over.
Wow, I got it like 60. I got it like 60 earlier this week. On my Fox stuff, but that's crazy. Yeah. So, I mean, 74 and a half is much different than 60, obviously. Wow. Yeah. That's a lot, but I think he's their offense.
Maybe FanDuel has something different. That's what DraftKings has. FanDuel has, let's see if they have it up. Lamar Jackson rushing 76.
Oh man.
I mean, Fox bet has it at 62 and a half of his last night.
Wow.
Someone listened to us yesterday, Jeff. Someone listened to us. On a numbers game.
I guess they did. I think even at 75, I don't know. I didn't do research on that. I think that's still not that bad. I mean, he's their offense. Like, if they move the ball, it's because of Lamar Jackson.
All right, Chris, don't go Oppo here.
Oppo? I have to go Oppo. What's really interesting about this is last week,
yes,
I bet Baltimore or Indianapolis, mm-hmm, and Baltimore. This week, I'm switching.
You like Buffalo?
I like Buffalo. I like Baltimore a lot. I think they're a great team. They went through their slump. They had a ton of injuries during the middle of the season. They tried the pocket passer Jackson experiment for a bunch of games, and that didn't work. So, we saw it all coming weeks and weeks ahead of time because they had a soft schedule then, and everybody knew it. So they've been beating up on teams like Cincinnati, the Giants, the Jaguars, Dallas. The miracle win against Cleveland, which was very stressful since I wasn't watching. I was watching on Twitter, and I couldn't tell exactly what was going on, so it drove me nuts. And it was a big wager for me, too.
I heard it was stressful.
And then last week, and how do you only score 20 points against Tennessee? I mean...
Suspect defense.
Yeah, I mean, Tennessee, everybody scored more than 20 points except... New England, who has no offense, and I forget who the other team was, but only another horrible offensive team. So I think that that's kind of telling that they couldn't put points up on the board against Tennessee. And my trailing 6 weeks, I like to see how teams are doing over the previous 6 weeks. And Baltimore's improved slightly, but has only gained three quarters of a point of value in my metrics, and Buffalo quietly, they've gained almost 7 points of value over the last 6 weeks, and they've only lost that one Hail Murray game in their last 11 games. They're 10-1. They're my highest rated AFC team. They're number one in offense, number 10 in defense, and number 10 in defense is pretty good because they were wallowing in the mid-20s. I couldn't believe how bad their defense was, at the half point of the season. So I like both teams, but I see the value. I took Buffalo on the money line. Should land on three, so.
I hope we both win, because I got Baltimore in the teaser. Like, we can both win this
yep.
one. It's like E texted, he goes, will one person, he's listening to a numbers game, he's like, will one person pick Buffalo, for God's sakes? Because Baltimore became very trendy this week. Your points.
I like Buffalo,
by the way,
too.
By the way, Denver was the other team that did not score against Tennessee. Opening game, they only scored, I think, like 16 or 14, somewhere in there.
Oh, the field goal to,
yeah,
debacle.
That's right. The field goal debacle. That's right. The Gostkowski game.
Yeah.
Mikey.
I like the game over.
Okay.
I think Baltimore is able to run the ball here. And I think Josh Allen makes some big plays against the blitz, against Don Martindale's blitzes. I think he'll be able to, if they can pick up the blitz, and he's going to have some opportunities to make big plays. And I think this will be a very competitive game, but I think the game plays into the upper 20s or 30s. I think both teams' offenses will be flattered by the defensive matchup that they have. So it's tough to pick this game. I'd tease Baltimore up. I don't think this game lands more than a touchdown either way, but the over is my play.
50 is flat. Where that is right now. Todd, you said you like Buffalo?
Yeah, this Chris said exactly what I was going to say, which is Tennessee defense is not even a defense. Me, you, and Mike could play better defense than Tennessee against most NFL teams, and they could only get 20 points against Tennessee. That's not good. And here's the thing. You heard me say last week I didn't like the Bills' defense because when they played anybody good, they gave up points just like they did against the Colts, which is what we thought was going to happen. But the Tennessee is not a good defensive team, and Baltimore can't score on them. So if Baltimore can't score on Tennessee's defense, what are they going to do against the Bills' defense, which is maybe a little bit better than Tennessee's? So I don't see Baltimore scoring big here. And the Bills' offense is the elite offense behind Kansas City and AFC. So while the Ravens are good on defense, I don't see them stopping the Bills cold. I mean, you only have to win the game by 2.5 points, even if it's a tight game. You know, if it comes down to the end, you want Lamar Jackson driving down for you, having to throw the ball, or you want Josh Allen having to throw the ball? To me, I want Josh Allen in a late game situation. I do not want Lamar Jackson. Lamar Jackson, that's all he can do is run. He still can't throw the football. So give me the Bills.
I just want to bring up what I brought up last week on the show, and I think on a numbers game also. The Pro Football Focus stat. Josh Allen, the most turnover worthy plays, the guy who's been the most fortunate on those, that it hasn't gone against him. So it's just, there's an accident waiting to happen out there at some point. Don't know when, but we'll see if it's this week or not.
By the way, one other thing. Didn't the Baltimore Ravens defense give up 42 points in a very big Monday Night Football game to another team like Buffalo that can move the ball? Cleveland scored 42 on this defense. You don't think the Bills can move the ball? Bills, baby. Bills!
Okay. Well, as long as you said it like that, then it must be right. Sunday, Kansas City starts things off. The Chiefs, 10-point favorites against the Brownies. That's a 305. Remember, these are staggered a little earlier on Sunday. Saturday, it's 435 Eastern, then 815 Eastern into the night. Sunday, it starts at 305 Eastern with Kansas City. 10-point favorites hosting the Cleveland Browns. Total 57, Mr. Schwartz.
I'm not touching the 10. I have no. I'm a Chiefs fan, so I try to stay away from like taking their game just because I'm kind of irrational times with them. And they haven't covered in what, like 9 weeks, like some crazy number like that. I do like two things here. So their team total, which we talked about yesterday on the show, is 33. Is that what it's at right now?
Yes.
Or 34?
33.5. I see.
Okay, so they've played six games with Andy Reid and Pat Mahomes after a bye. They scored 40, 31, 40, 51, 35, and 35. And those 31 games were against the Niners and the Colts way back in 2018. The Colts had a good defense that year. I think they're going to score a ton of points in this game. Pat Mahomes talked about how him and Travis Kelce spent the weekend going over, really the previous week, going over every defense they could possibly face in the next round and writing out game plans for them before they even got to this weekend. Their offense has not played well recently, but the Browns' defense is 25th. They're 29th in deep passes, 29th on third down, and 28th on passes to the tight end. I actually like Travis Kelce over. I got 80.5. I don't know what you guys have. He's been really good after a bye, too, averaging about 90 yards a game. I think the Chiefs just score a ton of points. But my worry, of course, is that the Browns score a ton of points as well. I think the Chiefs go off on offense. Like, they've been waiting for this all year. I've talked to those guys there. They're like, we're waiting for the playoffs to be great, which worries me a little bit. I'm not going to lie about that. But I think that they're going to score just a all game, just continually score. I don't know if they can cover, though, the 10s. So I'm going to stay away from that.
We should be listening to Jeff particularly keenly when he's talking about the Chiefs with familial ties there. That's interesting. Las Vegas Chris, sir.
Getting back.
86. Before Las Vegas Chris goes, Travis Kelce is 86.5 on the receiving yards.
Thank you, Todd. Okay. Thank you, Todd.
I actually, getting back to Todd's point, with Kansas City having the number one offense, I actually had them number two behind Buffalo. So I think Buffalo is that strong. But I've ridiculed and made fun of the Browns the entire season. And they were highly ranked in some of the glamour categories early on and were getting a lot of attention. But I look at a lot of the other little things that are not glamour stats. They may have finished 11-5, but they had the second worst against the spread record. So they made me money all year long.
Fading them.
Yeah. And I got off them at the perfect time. And to give them credit, they've actually, on the metrics, done a very good job of improving throughout the course of the season. And Mayfield, you know, he's I'm not sure he's getting any of the credit just because of his reputation of I don't think people want to give him credit, but he's gone 9 out of 10 games without a turnover. So that's very important. You know, the only thing that I can look at in this game is the total, which is the over, because the point spread, anything can happen.
Kansas I'm not City, touching the 10.
No, there's just no way you can touch it. It doesn't matter where you put the number. You can put it at 7. You can put it at 13. I don't want anything to do with the game. So, but the over, Cleveland's offensive stats would be much better if they hadn't played the weather games. They had a handful of cluster games that don't show up in the metrics that you have to factor in. And it also improved their defensive stats. So they're much worse than they're showing on defense. And 11-5, and they were outscored. How do you get outscored for the entire season?
It's amazing.
The Atlanta Falcons went into week 17 5-10, and outscored their opponents.
So yeah, higher point differential,
it's
crazy.
So it just goes to show you, you know, anything can go on, you know, with these Browns games, and they put up 40 points two games in a row. They're firing on offense, and Kansas City's going to certainly be able to have their way with their defense. So the over is the only look I can do.
57 is what it is. The Pythagorean theorem record should have been 8-8 based on their point differential. For those who enjoy baseball metrics converted to football, Mike Palm.
No play.
Todd Wishnev.
By the way, Jeff, great job with the Lamar, because I checked FoxBet. They're at 75 too. So when you're getting 25% better than the line, you did a fantastic job with that one. You don't see that too often.
That's crazy. I might need to tell my producer for our show that, because we got to talk about this in like an hour and it's still at 62, so maybe gotta change what I have to do.
Not on FoxBet, it's not.
Oh, it's on 62 and a half still. Okay, good.
It's 75 on FoxBet now.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am, like I am, where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, if no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, we gotta. Yeah, we gotta, I gotta make that change. Good. Thank you for telling me okay. that.
Anyways, I like the. I actually like something right in this here. Game.
Thinks he'll like be done in under. An hour.
I like the under in the Kansas City under 57, under 57 and a half. They're steaming it like crazy to the over. To me, I think Stefanski is not a dumbbell, and I think Stefanski knows that he better give a steady diet of those hammering running backs. To slow this game down, because the only chance you have in hell of beating the Chiefs is a slow down game. If you want to start, scoring with them, forget about it. So I think they're going to be smart enough to know that we've got to run the ball here a lot with Chubby and Kareem Hunt and all that. So I think they're going to try to slow the game down. And Kansas City, they're fantastic, obviously, but it looks almost like they're not trying half the time. And in the playoffs, we saw what they could do last year when they were down 24-7 in the first half against one of the great NFL coaches of all time, Bill O'Brien. And then they were able to just incredibly come over the top with an insane amount of points. So obviously Kansas City can score. I just think 57 is a tremendously high number. So I'd like to take the under here because I think Cleveland's going to have to try to slow the game down with the running game because – I mean, who goes into a Kansas City game going, okay, yeah, let's try to outscore them?
John Gruden. John Gruden did, and he beat them.
I just want to say, I'm glad you brought that up because I think the idea of running the football is great against Kansas City, but those have to end in 7 points. You can't run the football and end in field goals. And what happens when you're down 31-17?
Yeah.
Are you still running the football? Like that, and that's a conundrum about running the ball, right? The Titans last year were supposed to run the ball. Well, they're down 28-17. They didn't run the ball no more. The Niners, right? Supposed to run the football. They were actually winning the game, and the Chiefs shut them down at the end in the rushing game. So, like, the idea of running the football is great only if it ends in 7 points. If it ends in three, it means nothing. It does not help you win the game.
Okay, Jeff, so then let's go under first half. That's a great point. That's a great point what you're saying. Let's go under first half then, because the first half is going to probably be over 28 and a half or something ridiculous, right? So in they definitely could come out early and run the ball and try that, right? Yeah. They're going to try to slow it down. I'll agree with you. In the second half, they're not going to be able to if they're down too much. But in the first half, they're certainly going to try to slow it down. So let's go under first half. We get a big long drive on the first drive, ends in a field goal. You're in great shape. Under 28, is it 28 and a half, Gilly, for the first half?
28.
I'm sure you could find a 28 and a half because they're steaming the hell out of this game to the upside. So if you can get under 28 and a half first half, I would take that. And that's a great point by Jeff. In the second half, they probably won't be able to do that, but I think they'll be able to try it in the first half.
You're right. I see some 28 and a halves. Yep.
I agree.
There has to be 28.
I agree with Todd 100%. I just sense that one or both of these teams are going to get off to one of these slow starts and kick a field goal or something's going to slow it down early.
All right.
I actually think it might be Kansas City who starts slow. We've seen them even off these buys. They score a ton of points, but they kind of do start slow early on. But I think this Browns defense, though, is just – so we'll see how slow they start.
Well, last year – by the way, Jeff, last year they were down 24-7 in the first quarter against the Hall of Fame coach Bill O'Brien.
I think it was actually 24-0.
It was 21-0, and O'Brien didn't go 4th and inches. Called a timeout and then said he didn't have a good 4th down play and kicked the field goal to go up 24-0.
You know what he was great at, though? Yeah. You know what he was great at? Being a GM, though. That's
no, he was better as a coach. He was better as a coach.
Nobody mentioned
it. I thought there was only one NFL coach of all time who was better than him, and that was Mike Tice of the Minnesota Vikings circa 1980-something.
By the way, last thing about that. Jeff, I thought you gave the best single bit of advice betting-wise last week, which we never got a chance to even get into, which was Stefanski's absence being, wouldn't matter the first 15 plays, and then after that it would. And that game was such a run out from the beginning that we never got a chance to make that actionable. It was just unbelievable.
Well, I did think we saw, though, in the third and fourth quarter when things got really tight, as the Steelers started scoring more, they went three and out. It was like, then if the Steelers had gone for it in the fourth down, maybe it would have been different. But the first half of that game, they were all in the red zone. They just ran the ball. It wasn't much thinking to do from the play caller.
That was Doug Williams and Washington's quarter number two in 1988, Super Bowl 22. Who could forget?
35 points.
35 unanswered. Oh, remember it like it was yesterday. All right, final game. Tampa Bay, New Orleans. Yeah, it's 3, although I'm seeing some 2.5s in some spots now. Hold on.
It's going the other way, Gil.
It's 2.5 now, right?
No, I have it going 3-15, 3-20. I have it going the opposite
way. I am looking at Bookmaker right now. Offshore, it's 2.5 in
our
some
sponsor.
Spots.
Our
former sponsor.
Former sponsor.
So I don't know. I mean, you can find this in all kinds of places right now. But you're right, Todd. I'm looking. Consensus is 3, but there is a 2.5 out there.
Are you sure you're not looking at like stale line? Because I don't.
First halves.
Right.
You're on first half still.
Oh, you're right. I was on first half still. Thank you, Chris. Chris is not even looking at my computer and knew exactly where my error was. I'm sorry.
I thought I'd have the lock of the century coming in. The line was moving against me. So
that's right. No, it's 3. I'm sorry. I'm ridiculous. It's -3, -120. I want no part of this game. I think it's probably a field goal either way. Jeff, let's start with you here.
Yeah, I had to write about this game, and I was like. I said my first line is, admittedly, I have no feel for this game. I have no idea what's going to happen. I think the under, if I were to take a play, would be under 52. The last I saw the number, I don't know what's at now.
52.
We have two really good defenses, and this line has moved up now 3 points as well from 49. We have two really good defenses, and there's a reason why the Saints defense has played well against Tampa this year. Now, Tampa's offense is different now. They've changed. But Marshawn Lattimore, in his time against Mike Evans, since 2017, has only allowed 9 catches total. That's it. And all the games they played against each other.
Wow.
Like, they kind of have Tampa Bay's number. And there's a reason why teams typically win the third game in this rematch, because they're just a better football team. But I don't really trust the Saints' offense right now. In their last 4 playoff games, for whatever reason, they don't score. They're going to do 20, 23 points. I just hate this game. The under is the only thing I'd play in this game. Either team can win. I have no idea. I wish I could give you more. I just really don't.
It's funny you brought that up because you just jogged something in my head. I asked Aaron Schatz, creator of Football Outsiders, before this last season when he made his pro football guide before the season started. I said, what was the most surprising thing even to you when you did all your research? Give me one stat that just leapt off the page. And he goes, you know, it's funny you asked that. In the Saints' last 3 playoff losses, Michael Thomas caught 3 passes total on third downs. He said that was the one that jumped off the page. He's like, that's why they got Emmanuel Sanders. That's at least the theory behind it. But that was the single thing that surprised him the most, that Michael Thomas just disappeared on high leverage plays in the playoffs, games that they lost. Interesting. Chris.
Well, they didn't look all that impressive last week, and I put them in the same category. I should have mentioned this when talking about Buffalo. I fully expected Buffalo to be rusty and just start off that last game just because all the pressure was on them and they were kind of walking on eggshells, and Indy just gave them all the breaks they needed to change that game. But I expected the same thing from New Orleans also. Why did they need to show anything? They played 10 quarters the entire season with the big three on offense. So you had the acclimation of getting them all working together, and you know they're trying different things. They have to integrate properly. I mean, every time you introduce new players, it takes a little bit of an adjustment. So, this is do or die for the Saints. The front office is going to get raided. Breeze is going to be gone. You don't know what's going to go on with the cap issues. So, there's going to be a sense of urgency with the Saints, I think. This is it. And I think that there's value here also because a lot of people follow the DVAO stats.
DVOA, yeah.
Yeah, and...
You do not.
No, I don't. But they
I know where you're going with this. Yeah,
they have Tampa rated at number 2, and that's simply not even remotely
it feels too high.
True. Yeah, it's not remotely true.
They've chronically overrated them all year.
Well, and that's how I was able to take... the games last week, because Tennessee was rated too high and Indianapolis was rated way too low. They had Indianapolis at 10th, which is absurd. And that's how I was able to find value in games last week and then switch to the complete opposite side the following week. You know, if people are going to follow data that's wrong,
You're going to get the skewed lines, and you're going to get the support that, that brings this line down. I'm surprised this line is a flat three. It should be higher. But like previously referenced, the Saints crushed Tampa twice already this year by double digits. And they have their number. They match up well. And people think, well, okay, Tampa's a different team than they were in the middle of the season. They're doing much better, and they're on a roll. But who did they beat? They struggled with Washington. They beat Atlanta twice. They played Detroit, Minnesota. They got the miracle cover against Kansas City. That game wasn't that close. I like Tampa Bay. I mean, you know, that's the problem. When you get to the playoffs, you get teams that you like betting on that match up, and you got to pick, you know, one or the other. So I definitely lean the Saints here. I think the value is there.
Lean, but no bet yet?
I wagered on the Saints.
You wagered on the Saints. Okay. Yeah. Mike?
I already laid three with the Saints. This is my strongest play of the weekend.
Really?
Yeah. All right. For many reasons. I think they match up well with them. I think the Saints are the best team in football, fully healthy. I think they're better than Kansas. They're balanced. The defense is nasty. I don't think Brady is an elite quarterback at this point. I mean, he made some throws. He's got some weapons this year, and that gives him an ability to be more productive. But I think he's going to have real trouble in this game. And the Tampa defense, we all still remember how they played against Rodgers. They haven't played to that level since. They blitzkrieg Rodgers in the second quarter of that game. They haven't played well. They haven't played a high level. Atlanta went up and down the field in the first half of that game in Atlanta, okay? They dominated that first half, and then they rallied. But I don't think this is close in terms of a talent level of these two teams. And I personally make this number six, so I laid three.
All right. I think there's a coaching issue that I think's important also. Because there's a lot of things about both of these teams that make them – pretty similar on the surface, and it very well may come down to coaching and who you're going to trust.
Peyton versus Arians Leftwich, offensively, you know, on that side.
Tampa only beat one team over 500 the whole season.
Allen, yeah, they're 1-5. Bowles. 1-5 against teams with a winning record. You know.
Do you like any of those coaching matchups, one side to the other? Jeff, sorry.
I have a question. So, how much do you guys like? And then maybe this is like the former player to me, where I kind of look at like how a team plays in the playoffs. Like, do you guys factor that at all into like the Saints just seem to like just something about the playoffs? They're just not as good as the Raiders. Do you guys ever think about that? Or just it doesn't, it's just every year is different.
Every year is different.
Yeah.
Interesting.
But let me ask you back. Do you think there is something to that?
Well, they definitely played not as well in the postseason as at least offensively the last four games. Like, whatever it is. Look, they've only won two playoff games in a single season since 2009. The year they won the Super Bowl, they haven't won more than two in any of that time. And they've had four 11-win seasons in a row now. Like, they have not won a lot of playoff games. They lost last year against Minnesota as almost a touchdown favorite. They lost the year before at home against the Rams. Yeah, I get the interception, but they also had the ball first in overtime and allowed an interception. Like, they had a chance to win that game multiple times, didn't do it. Against the Bears, defense is good, but they're not like that good. And the Saints kind of just look meh again.
They did.
And so I just feel like in the postseason, for whatever reason, I can't put my finger, I don't know what it is. I don't think it's Drew Brees getting older. Maybe his arm is not as good in the postseason. They're just like not as good in offense.
How do you feel about the Taysom Hill Michigas when it happens?
I swear that guy has like nude pictures of Sean Payton on his phone.
I'm so glad you said that.
I don't get it either. Okay. I talked to a defensive coach in the NFL, and he said the reason why they do it is to make defenses prepare for it. Sure, that's very valid, right? So defenses have to spend an extra 10, 15 minutes a day at practice working on the Taysom Hill plays. It's all fair. But the problem is that when you put him in the game, you typically do it after Drew Brees has had like three good plays in a row. I don't get it. He's playing like completed pass, here comes Taysom Hill, and then he just gives it, you know, and then he just hitches eight times in the pocket and throws an interception. Like, I don't see the value and play him like this? Who else takes out of Hall of Fame quarterback to put in a 30-year-old tight end? I don't get it, man. Yeah. I do not understand it. It makes no sense to me whatsoever.
I feel so much better because every time it happens, a little part of me dies inside. And I'm like, he's not as good as Breeze at throwing. He's not as good as Kamara running. He's not as good as Thomas catch. Like, everything he does seems like a downgrade. And I just feel like Sean Payton is feeding his own headlines with that sometimes.
He wants to be smarter than everyone else.
That's what it is. Here's another guy who wants to be smarter than everybody else. Todd Wishnev, everybody.
I was waiting for you to try
it's
that.
It's a perfect segue you set me up for.
That's real nice. The difference between me and him is one actually is there smarter is. Than me.
There's there, it is. There we go. Yeah,
well,
there
one there's, has a better resume.
Yes.
Uh-oh.
Yes, exactly. I've never seen him get invited to the Pork Attic. Okay, I'm just trying to get on the under here in the team total and the Cal Bears against Colorado Buffaloes. Cal Bears under 57.5 team total, folks. Get it while it's hot. Anyways, the thing I wanted to say, you know, Chris brought up a great point, and this is one that I'm always on the crusade about, and that is the models are not enough. You cannot, especially in football, you cannot just be statistical oriented in football. You have to understand the game. The Pittsburgh Steelers data from the Cleveland Browns game is completely fugazi, folks. They did not, all that offense was against prevent defense. Every single bit of that offense was not against a Cleveland Browns defense that was trying until maybe it was 35-23. So all that offense, you could just throw it in the garbage, okay? So all this modeling nonsense, and I love modeling. I'm all for it. But you have to realize that it's polluted. And it gets polluted because of games like Pittsburgh-Cleveland last week, which was absolutely not the real statistics.
Yes, good, I mean, good modelers, to your point, will have to manually go in and remove dirty data like that.
Where is it going for this game?
We're
on the Saints game,
yeah,
Todd.
We're on the last pick here, okay. Todd. Let's get us out of here.
Jeff's got another show here in 20 minutes.
Yeah,
let's
right.
go.
We've already kept him too
Move
long.
It along.
What do you got?
I'm sorry. You guys are, you know, Buster forever. So, okay, anyways, the other thing I was going to say is this is – I always say at the NFL, in-game is the way to go. You shouldn't play these games pregame. You might as well go in-game. This game, of all the games, is an in-game. Because if the Saints are putting pressure on TB12, lights out for Tampa Bay. If the Saints are not putting pressure on TB12, then maybe it's going to be a tight game. So this is the kind of game where I'm going to see, are the Saints giving him a hard time? You got to get on the Saints. So, you know, Tampa Bay's defense – I don't see what's so great about Tampa Bay's defense. Heinicke moved on them. The Giants moved on them. Tons of teams move on Tampa Bay, so I'll be surprised if New Orleans, even if they have Taysom Hill in the game, is not able to move the ball on Tampa Bay. I think they'll be able to move the ball on Tampa Bay. So to me, this game just comes down to one thing. Are the Saints pressuring TB12? Are they not pressuring him? If they are, it's all Saints all the time. If they're not, maybe it's a close game.
All right. We've done all we can do. Real yep. quick, the best bet for everybody. Jeff, your single best bet was?
I'll stick with Lamar Jackson over rushing yards.
Chris?
I'm going to go against the team playing their fourth road game in 5 weeks.
And that would be?
Saints.
Saints. Against the Saints.
Yeah. No, against the team playing.
Against the Bucs.
Yeah, the Bucs gotcha. Are playing four out of five.
So Saints minus three is your favorite?
Saints minus three.
Ravens, Packers, teaser for me. Dodd?
I'll take the Bills. Bills minus 2.5.
Okay. Jeff Schwartz, thank you so much. We've kept you long, and we appreciate it. Jeff Schwartz, again, the name of the podcast. Jeff Schwartz is Smarter Than You. The gambling-related podcast, once again, is called, let me get it right. I want to make it right. Minus 3 with
What's
Sheck
your Twitter,
and Schwartz. Hold on, Todd. I'm just after the sentence. Minus 3 with Sheck and Schwartz with Dave Damashek and Cousin Sal makes appearances as well. It is Jeff Schwartz, GeoffSchartz. SchWartz, pardon me. Couldn't thank you enough, Jeff. I know you have another show to do. We appreciate it, man. Thank you so much.
Yeah, glad to be here. Take care, everyone.
You too. Las Vegas, Chris.
Jeff.
Mike Palm.
Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom. Not on a Thursday, but still, we appreciate it. And Todd Wishnev, thanks everybody for listening. Good luck with everything divisional round weekend from all of us on the Megapod. Right here, live from the D.
Bar Canada.
Bar Canada. Right here in Las Vegas.
If
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.